This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. The Curtis Institute of Music here in Philadelphia has nurtured many talented musicians and helped them develop their careers. A concert this Saturday night, the Orchestra 2001 New Music Celebration of the Life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. brings together several Curtis alumni at the Kimmel Center's Perlman Theater. Anthony McGill, principal clarinetist of the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra, will be performing a world premier clarinet concerto from the Mountaintop, composed by Richard Danielpour. Trumpet player Stanford Thompson's play on Philly students will be performing with the professional musicians and will debut one of their compositions, Symphony in the Key of Unity. Well, we asked Anthony McGill and Stanford Thompson to join us in this hour of Radio Times. As I said, Anthony McGill, principal clarinetist at the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra, a much-in-demand soloist, in fact, was one of the musicians who performed at President Obama's very, very, very cold 2009 inauguration. He has a CD that came out a couple of years ago, one coming out later this year, and he's a 2000 Curtis Institute of Music graduate. And Anthony McGill, a great pleasure. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Nice to have you here. Stanford Thompson, CEO of Play on Philly, and that's an El Sistema-inspired tuition-free after-school music program. Started classes at St. Francis de Sales School in West Philadelphia, has since opened a chapter at the Frieri Charter Middle School in Center City, Philadelphia. He is a trumpet player, as I said, and a 2009 Curtis Institute of Music graduate. And Stanford Thompson, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me here.
You're very welcome. Anthony, let me begin with you. Do you prepare for a world premiere any differently than you prepare for any other kind of performance?
No, I think that this is actually my first, the first concerto that was ever written for me. So, besides there being that extra bit of excitement and getting to actually work with the composer that wrote it for me, I mean, that's the best part about it.
Well, I'm curious about that kind of working relationship when someone is writing something for you, the kind of back and forth that you might have.
Right. It's been pretty wonderful working with Richard on this, kind of getting together and kind of getting his concept for the piece, finding out the background, kind of trying to get inside of his mind and his heart to figure out what the meaning is for the piece and why he wrote it, so I can communicate that to the audience.
And obviously it's in commemoration of Martin Luther King Jr., From the Mountaintop, all these King-related important issues.
Exactly. So it was really meaningful, really wonderful to work with him.
I'm curious, when you're preparing for another concert that perhaps of something that has been performed many, many times, do you listen to recordings? Is that something that you do in preparation?
Yes, exactly. That's one of the big differences, actually, is that you don't get to have that recording, you know, in front of you that you play over or play with or whatever you do to hear different interpretations of the piece. So it's really a great experience to be able to kind of take it on my own, you know, and kind of let it grow and kind of sit with me, you know, because I'm the only one that's ever played it.
Exactly. You're preparing your students. How are they doing? Are they ready for tomorrow night's performance?
They're ready. They're usually
ready. Are you ready?
Well, I mean, we're all a little bit nervous. It's a new thing for us. And to think 3 years ago when we performed in the Perlman Theater for the first time, the kids were playing Twinkle Twinkle. And now to see them come together as a full orchestra, to be able to feature Anthony, also to feature a work that they composed just a couple of months ago, it's all a very new and very exciting process for us.
And what grade are the students that will be performing?
Fourth through eighth grade.
And they did compose something for the performance?
Yes. A couple months ago, we started our first composition studio. And we have eight students in that class, and they've been working with one of our great teaching artists, Ben Mulholland. And Ben has prepared them to really put together their own piece. We also brought in an outside arranger to help them orchestrate it. And it's really cool for them to watch it come to life.
Well, and just the whole process of composing a new piece of music.
Right. I like to be at the end of that process.
Are you? Are you so, just pacing out in the hallway while all this is going on?
Sure, yeah. So it's a really cool thing to watch the kids have that opportunity.
They're also going to be playing I guess it's a spiritual medley, and it's arranged by Joseph Hart.
Yes.
Performing with the orchestra?
Yes, and that features Anthony. So there are three different spirituals, Amazing Grace, Jericho, and then also Lift Every Voice and Sing.
And what is it like to play with fourth grader, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth graders?
This is really exciting. I knew we were going to be doing things together with Play on Philly, and you know, I knew Stan was doing great stuff down here. I didn't really know I was going to be able to get to play with these kids until fairly recently. So you know, I walked into rehearsal. I had the music from a few days before, and we went at it. We just kind of went through the piece, and it was pretty awesome, you know. I mean, they sound great. And if what you're telling me, you know, about just 4 years ago, you know, a couple years ago, they were just doing that. I mean, this is awesome. You know, they sound like an ensemble.
And did you prepare them for Anthony McGill, Stanford?
Yes. I mean, the kids
famous
were really excited.
Clarinetist.
But, you know, I mean, you know, they're in a way, they're used to it. You know, it's Anthony's coming in, and he's no different than anybody else we've had in, you know, to work with or play with the kids. But they know it's something very special.
They're pros. I think they're pros, you know.
Well, we want to play an excerpt of a rehearsal. This is from this Tuesday, this week, at the Francis DeSales School Auditorium. This is a play on Philly Students Orchestra, grades 4 through 8, performing with Orchestra 2001, and our guest clarinetist Anthony McGill is soloing. Let's listen. Really great. I'm looking at you, Stanford. Those are your students.
Yeah, and it's incredible to hear it all come together.
And that was Amazing Grace. Yeah.
And I mean, it's a tune that I personally love. I remember putting together the arrangement and just said, that's a tune mm-hmm. that just has to be in it. And to hear Anthony play it, and you know, the kids, I mean, it's let me not cry.
But, you can cry.
So. Yeah, you can cry. It's okay. I'm curious about how you prepare them, even sort of emotionally or psychologically, to perform in such a big venue for young kids.
Sure. I mean, a lot of it comes in terms of having the kids for 3 hours every day, you know, practicing, you know, reminding them about the entire process, from putting together their instruments to, you know, making sure they have the stamina to get through the pieces. But more importantly, I mean, the kids are performing probably on average every 2 weeks. They're in front of big audiences. They've, for example, played for, you know, 5,000 at the Pennsylvania Conference for Women, 50,000 in the Philly Stadium. And for them to, in a way, kind of come back home to a venue like the Pearlman Theater, mm-hmm. you know, it's just, okay, guys, you guys know what to do. You know, we've been working hard at it. You have a moment. And like Anthony knows, for example, you have a couple of minutes, you know, to prove yourself. So don't let all those hours just, you know, go down the drain.
You can relate to that, Anthony?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when you put it like that, it makes me nervous, you know.
But this interesting stamina. I mean, do you feel like as a performer you need to have stamina, obviously, but that's something that you have to work on?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as the kids probably understand, you know, if you play your instrument enough, you develop that sort of stamina, you know, just for, you know, I don't think about it so much, but there is often a lot of pressure when you perform for audiences. And, you know, but in different circumstances, there's different amounts of pressure. For instance, you know, I may get more nervous playing for a group of fourth graders than I do playing for 4,000 people at the Met. You know, you just never know. Sometimes it's how much you are excited mm-hmm. to do the thing, you know, and how much you get kind of revved up mm-hmm. for it. And so it's always different, but that's what makes you alive. You know, that's what makes live performing, you know, performances so great.
Are there certain things that you do, even rituals that you do in preparation for a performance?
I mean, I don't like to play on an empty stomach, you know. So I'll make sure to have a couple bananas. You know, I'll make sure that I don't practice. I just practice enough. I don't practice too much, so I don't tire out my embouchure. That sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't like to actually, I don't like to talk too much before I play, which is funny. A long time ago, a teacher told me, you know, maybe you're like socializing, getting too, you know, too excited, you know, like before you play. So maybe just breathe and calm down before you play. Take it easy. Slow things down a little bit. So I probably do that still.
Are there certain things you do, Stan?
Oh.
In preparation for a performance?
I probably do all of the opposite. You know, I'm the
You're
guy
talking,
that,
talking, 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 talking.
That has to talk. I'm having a pizza before I play. It's one of the worst things to do. But, I mean, it helps me to stay relaxed. But most of the time, I get very nervous about 2 or 3 minutes before I go out. And then, you know, when it's time to perform, it all comes back together. Mm. So I'm always reminded of that.
And nervous butterflies. Why am I doing this?
Oh,
I wish
yeah.
I were somewhere else.
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
all those kinds of things.
Yeah, there have been several of those moments. So, but I know time will always pass and the piece will come to an end.
And I've seen you perform, Anthony, and I mean, it looks like you just love it. I mean, you just once you're on the stage and perhaps all the steps that get you there, is that you're having a wonderful time.
That's good, because sometimes, you know, inside it can be like a storm, you know, but I think the best part about it is that when you get out there and you're playing music that you enjoy to play, that you become a listener and a part of it, just like an audience member almost, with your own performance. Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird, but, you know, you can kind of step outside of yourself a little bit and you realize how much you're enjoying it, and then you hope to just reach the people that are listening to it. And so it's kind of that sort of process that goes on inside. So, you know.
And can you sense the audience, sort of the vibe or whatever is coming up from the audience?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I know in terms of talking about stamina, well, when Anthony talked with the kids on Tuesday, I was explaining to them, you know, the differences between being in an opera orchestra and being in a regular orchestra. Now, they already think a 2-hour orchestra concert is long. I remember when the kids got their first piece that was 2 pages, and they were like, oh, wow, this is 2 minutes long. I mean, this is. But to start telling them, you know, even Anthony's playing 3-hour operas. You know, I think I lost a couple of them when I started talking about that. So
3 hours. Those are the short ones.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're talking maybe 5, 6.
Yeah, four.
Four.
Average, 3.5. Yeah.
Well, I was trying not to scare them too much. So.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation, talking with Anthony McGill, principal clarinetist at the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra, Stanford Thompson, CEO of Play on Philly. They're here in part because the Orchestra 2001 New Music Celebration of the Life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. will be performed this Saturday at the Perlman Theater at the Kimmel Center at 8 o'clock, a pre-concert discussion beginning at 7:30. Also, this program will also be performed next Sunday, January 26th, at the Lang Concert Hall at Swarthmore College. There's a pre-concert talk beginning at 2:30, and Anthony McGill is going to be premiering a concerto written by Daniel Poor, and we're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation, play some more music, and also open up the lines at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Friends Schools of Bucks County are committed to challenging minds and nurturing spirits to prepare students for life. Providing independent education from preschool through 12th grade, the Friends Schools of Bucks County include United Friends, Newtown Friends, Buckingham Friends, and the George School. Guided by Quaker values, these schools provide a core curriculum while fostering exploration, self-discipline, creativity, and a desire to learn. United Friends, Newtown Friends, Buckingham Friends, and the George School support WHYY.
I'm Jesse Thorne. Picture an asthmatic art school kid who loves comic books. What do you think he'll grow up to be? Go ahead, take a guess. Say it out loud. Bah, you're wrong. Unless you said rapper. That kid became Pharrell Monch. He's my guest in the next Bullseye from NPR.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now.
Mr. President, great news. Beyonce has just arrived for dinner, too.
Beyonce!
Don't even.
Saturday Night Live took heat for not having diversity. Will African-American comedian Sasheer Zamata silence critics? That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with Anthony McGill, principal clarinetist at the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra. Also talking with trumpeter Stanford Thompson, CEO of Play on Philly. And before we get back to our conversation, I want to play an excerpt of Anthony McGill performing Francis Poulenc's Allegro Tristemente. That's from the Sonata for Clarinet and Piano from his 2010 recording, called Anthony McGill. He's accompanied by pianist Gloria Chien. Let's listen. Again, an excerpt of our guest, Anthony McGill, performing Francis Poulenc's Allegro Tristemente from Sonata for Clarinet and Piano, again from his 2010 recording called Anthony McGill, and again accompanied by pianist Gloria Chien. And it's just beautiful. I don't know what else to say.
Thanks. Thank you.
What's wonderful, actually, listening with headphones is I can just hear your breath.
Right.
And I can just hear your fingers,
right.
Just slightly, you know, just very sort of like a flutter.
Right, yeah.
Do you like listening to yourself?
No, not especially. No,
you don't hear what we hear?
It's wonderful. I'm listening a little differently. Yeah. That's what's funny. I mean, I actually really enjoy it because I remember the process that we went through to record it, and I remember all those little details that we were listening to, you know, and rehearsing and practicing, and you know, so that's kind of the interesting part about it. But it's more like analytical,
yeah,
when I
sure.
listen to myself than it is, you know, what? Enjoyable.
You're both Curtis grads. Do you think there's a sort of sound that comes out of Curtis? I'm looking at you, Stanford.
Oh wow.
Do you think? Or a style of play or an approach to music that can be identified as something coming from Curtis?
Well, I would certainly say, I mean, in terms of, you know, the musical history here in Philadelphia, I mean, there are tons of connections. I would certainly also say for the majority of the grads that come out of Curtis, I mean, there's a very unique sound. But the thing that's most special about it is that it's really unique to the individual. You know, when I hear Anthony play, it's not just another really great clarinet sound. It's Anthony's mm-hmm. clarinet sound. And I think that's the unique part about what Curtis produces, really lets everybody have their own
identity. You think that's true, Anthony?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, and it's such a small little, like, you know, collective of musicians that come out of it every year that you do find a bond. There is a kind of connecting tissue, you know, and you can just go to a concert of the Philadelphia Orchestra and see a lot of your colleagues and hear them, and you connect it. You see that, you feel that energy being connected, mm-hmm. I think.
Right. And this has happened to me in Korea. It's happened to me all over the country. You know, I sit down and collaborate with other Curtis musicians, and it's just this instant, you know, we know how each other will phrase, I mean, you know, what we'll be thinking about. And then there are other times, you know, I sit there and say, wow, what school did you go to? I mean, obviously, you didn't come out of Curtis. So.
Oh, are you a snob?
Oh, well,
uh-oh, did you just go there? You just went there, didn't you? Yep.
No, that was Anthony McGill.
Oh, it was.
That.
Okay.
No.
Was the trumpet your first instrument, Stanford?
Yes, and I wanted to play trombone. And
oh.
My dad told me my arms were too short.
Oh.
And
was he right?
No, because, I mean, I look at my kids now, they're smaller than I was, and they're doing okay.
They just can't get certain notes, huh?
Well, yeah, certain notes. I mean, but, for, you know, my dad made it seem like I would only be able to play three different notes.
Oh, wow.
And then when I got bigger, my arms got longer, I just kept with the trumpet. It was close to the trombone, so.
And how young were you when you started playing
trumpet? I was seven.
Well, and you come from, are your parents musical?
They're both music educators. So my father taught middle school band. My mother taught high school orchestra. I was around it a lot, but because of it, I also wanted to do a lot of other things, which I did. And it was watching my older brother, Eric, who also went to Curtis, watching him be very serious about music. And he was in the youth orchestra. Mm-hmm. He went to Interlochen, and he went to all these places that I couldn't go. And I wanted to hang out with him. So I knew the only way I would have to get as good as he was. And then, you know, I slowly fell in love with it. So it took some time for me to realize that trumpet just might be my thing.
So you were doing just non-music, typical boy things?
Oh, sports and computers and, you know, I wanted to be an astronaut, really. But then I figured out you had to know something about science and math. And
that's awesome.
Yeah.
We have a lot in common.
Well, yeah. You grew up in Atlanta, Stanford. You grew up in Chicago.
Yeah, I grew up in Chicago, but kind of listening to Stanford's story, it's like, wait a second, that sounds like my story.
Wow.
You know, because my older brother played the flute, and he was, like, absolutely amazing. He was, like, the best flute player growing up in Chicago. And, you know, he went to Interlochen. He went to Curtis. It's like kind of like a very similar thing, you know. So yeah, that was my, you know, inspiration growing up was my big bro too.
And was clarinet what you wanted?
Yeah, I was going to say it. Yeah,
I wanted saxophone.
Oh.
But they said it was too big for me, so I played clarinet.
Are you twins?
I think we might be. That's hilarious.
I wonder how our lives would have turned out if I played trombone and you played saxophone.
Yeah, really? Good would question. We be having this conversation? I don't know. Now, how old were you when you started playing clarinet?
I was 9.
Wow. Yeah. And was it, I mean, as you said, it wasn't your first instrument. Was it your dad who said you need a different instrument?
No, it was the band at school. They started 1 year, and like they had all the instruments laid out, and, you know, that was the one I gravitated to. But, you know, in the clarinet, when I picked it up, loved it, liked it right
really?
Away. Yeah, right away.
And were you good at it right away?
I could play it. You know, I could get some sounds out of it. I you know, maybe I imagined that in my dreams, but I think I was playing some notes right away, because I knew the concept of how to play a wind instrument because of my brother. Mm. And so, you know, you blow and you move your finger. So I knew how to do that.
And you've just kind of worked on that for the last so many years.
Exactly.
Now, was your family musical as well? And obviously your brother is.
Yeah.
But how about your parents?
My mom was musical. My dad was musical in his own way. They were both art teachers, though, so they were both artistic. And they used to get, my mom always sang and danced. She was a dance instructor and singer and, you know, Renaissance woman. And my dad played the flute briefly, like when they would get together and have jam sessions and parties back in the 60s, I think. But the flute ended up in the closet. So that's how my brother started. You know, but it was a very artistic and musical family in many different ways.
And for you, a lot of what kind of music, Stanford, in your house as you were growing up, the kind of music that might be on in the background or your parents listened to?
Oh, a lot of jazz, mainly because my dad controlled the radio. If my mom controlled it, my mom took me to the orchestra a good bit. So
that'd be the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you, and that's Stanford Thompson, CEO of Play on Philadelphia. That's an El Sistema-inspired, tuition-free after-school music program. It's now in two schools in Philadelphia, at St. Francis de Sales in West Philadelphia and the Frieri Charter Middle School in Center City, Philadelphia. He's a trumpet player, a 2009 Curtis Institute of Music graduate. Also with us, Anthony McGill. He's the principal clarinetist at the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra, a 2000 Curtis Institute of Music graduate, and they are both involved in a performance that's going to be at the Perlman Theater at the Kimmel Center tomorrow night. It's the Orchestra 2001 New Music Celebration of the Life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We're taking calls. Any questions or comments you might have, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at Marty Moss Coaim. Stanford, I'm just curious about when you were growing up, it wasn't that long ago. Same with you, Anthony, which is, were there music schools, music classes in school? I mean, if you went to school, could you get a good musical education? This would be in Atlanta for you.
Sure. In elementary and middle school, especially when I started playing trumpet, there were really not too many options. We had a county youth orchestra that my mom was one of the co-directors, so she would sneak me into the orchestra. I played third, fourth trumpet. Mm-hmm. She would sit with me and help me count rest, because that's what would, you know, produce the most amount of mistakes. And then when I was in high school, I was fortunate to go to a high school that had a very active marching band program. Mm-hmm. It was actually the high school program that the movie Drumline was based off of. So my freshman year of high school, I spent helping to film and record the soundtrack of that movie, which was a lot of fun. But then, you know, I got into the youth orchestra, and that really took me away from doing more marching band throughout the rest of high school. And the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra had a great outreach program called the Talent Development Program. And they sponsored 25 African-American and Latino students. And we received lessons every week from members of the Atlanta Symphony, and they helped us pay for summer tuition. And so it was, I mean, that really got me exposed to the orchestra much more and really helped to put me on a path to getting to Curtis.
Yeah. I'm curious for you in Chicago, Anthony, whether there were good school music programs. I mean, the reason I'm asking is because I want to talk a bit about your play on Philly, but I'm curious about your musical education.
Yeah. In Chicago, basically around the time, you know, I started studying, they were getting rid of all of the arts programs in the schools. And, you know, I got lucky my first year of studying because at my parochial school, you know, they started a band there. But that only lasted for like a year. And so we had to find some other outlets and some other music school outside of the schools in order to study. So a great program that I started out was called the Merritt Music School, or the Merritt School of Music now. And if it wasn't for that program, you know, I might have not advanced in the way that I did. Mm-hmm. They gave me opportunities to study with the principal clarinetist of the Chicago Symphony at the time, and scholarships to go to camps, which we definitely needed growing up. So, I mean, to connect that with Stan, what I see is that I know that I'm still friends with the people that basically were running that program. I'm part of that family for life. So I know that, you know, you're that person for all of those kids.
Well, I know school districts have to make really tough decisions, and this is not to in any way sort of criticize some of those decisions that have to be made, but it is so worrisome, Stanford, when you hear about music programs being cut.
Right.
And obviously the fact that you both, I mean, you had family that was helping you find the music that you needed, but nonetheless, a lot of kids don't end up that way.
Right. And, I mean, it was, I know for both Anthony and my families, I mean, it's a struggle to piece together opportunity after opportunity. You know, scholarship here or there, or who do you study with? Who will give you a chance? Who will cut you a deal and not charge you $125 an hour for a lesson? I mean, those types of things. It was a challenge. And, you know, knowing that I went through the process and got through it, and there was a roadmap. And that in a city like Philadelphia, there mm-hmm. are resources. It's just the challenge is pulling it all together and making sure that, you know, some of our most vulnerable kids here in the city have that opportunity. So it's a big job. We've just started the beginning of this, and really looking forward to watching, you know, both the organization mature more and watching the program grow in more places in the city.
Are there certain kids that kind of stand out when you think about Play on Philly and what music in this program has meant to them?
Oh, of course. I mean, not only do we see it in the data reports that we get back, but I mean, in the lives of the kids, we have, you know, a couple kids studying with members of the Philly Orchestra, playing in other mainstream ensembles here in the city. But then, you know, we watch those kids that struggle a lot at home. And they come into the program and they have a voice. Maybe mm-hmm. they've written a piece of music. Maybe they have struggled for 2.5 years and the light bulb finally comes off. That's a really cool thing to see. And I think anybody that works with children, I mean, you know when that light bulb has come off, because they come back in more hungry the next day. And it's great because we can see them every day to watch when that light bulb goes off. I mean, they can really take advantage of not only the musical skills, but the other social skills that we feel that are much more important for these kids to learn.
There's a word that people are banding around called grit. I mean, the idea of sticking to something, of working hard and working on getting those kinds of results. And I know you work with young people as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, with my schedule at the Met and my teaching schedule, it's like to have a week like this, you know, and this is a very busy week, right? This is my one vacation week from the Metropolitan Opera. And I couldn't imagine spending it anywhere else right now.
Really?
Just being able to be anywhere close to what's going on here with Play on Philly. And obviously the concerto is really awesome. But to be able to kind of witness just a little bit of what Stan is doing, as I told him the other night, you know, a lot of us get to talk about how we would love to be doing more outreach, how we would love to be speaking to our communities more, and how to be reaching out to different audiences and diversity. And lots of us are talking this talk, right? And I try to walk it whenever I can. He's living it. You know, Stan and Play on Philly is it happening right now. And so as much as people in Philadelphia area, whoever's listening to this, can look online and see what he's doing with Play on Philly, I think mm-hmm. it's the real deal. You know, it's the real deal. And he's changing lives. One student at a time.
Anything you want to say besides just blushing there?
Well, I mean, all I can say is thanks. I mean, it's always tough, you know, leaving a great school like Curtis and making that decision of saying, you know, where do we see our lives going? I mean, Anthony and I, we took different paths, but, you know, we're both sharing music in very profound ways with people. And, you know, Anthony does it from the stage of the Met and recital halls all over the country. And, of course, I'm doing it starting with Twinkle Twinkle, but mm-hmm. we're going to get these kids up. And, you know, sure enough, you know, we hope that we don't have to replace the Met.
Yeah, watch
come
out
on,
there. Bring it on, right?
We'd be happy to be replaced by you guys.
But I'm assuming, I'm looking at you, Anthony, but I'm assuming that teaching makes you a better performer. I mean, no matter who your student is or whoever you're working with.
Yes. I mean, that's where I get my inspiration. And, you know, a lot of the kids that I teach regularly are older, you know, more of the lines that, you know, they want to dedicate their lives to it. But, you know, people always ask me, how do you find the time and the hours and why? It's because it's direct inspiration. You know, it is, we're listening to this music together and trying to find a way that they can find their voice. And like, I'm always trying to discover and find my voice to be able to communicate to audiences. And the more you do that, I think you're basically trying to, in all sincerity, trying to make the world a better place by putting more beautiful art out into it, you know? And so that's where I get my inspiration as far as teaching.
Let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We're going to play some more music as well. And again, that's Anthony McGill. He's the principal clarinetist at the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra, and he'll be performing tomorrow night a musical celebration of the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., performing at the Perlman Theater at the Kimmel Center at 8 o'clock. Also with us is a Stanford Thompson, CEO of Play on Philly, and his students will be performing. He'll be conducting as well. And we're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. Again, if you have any questions or comments, you can join our conversation at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Support for WHYY is provided by Interact Theater Company and Gideon's Knot. This drama unfolds during a parent-teacher conference following a young boy's suspension. As reasons for the boy's suspension become more alarming, the issues of violence, creativity, and nature versus nurture are explored. Gideon's Knot runs now through February 9th. Performances take place on the main stage of the Adrian at 2030 Sansom Street in Philadelphia. For tickets, 215-568-8079 or online at interacttheater.org.
On the next Fresh Air, the rise and fall of the Ku Klux Klan. We talk with David Cunningham, author of Klansville, USA. We'll hear how the Klan started wearing sheets and hoods, burning crosses, and terrorizing African Americans. And Cunningham will play us an excerpt of a speech recorded at a Klan rally and a recording by a popular Klan band. Join us. This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Does the NSA need a reboot?
I think so. I think that we're at a point we don't want to handicap our intelligence agencies, but we want to make sure that they have checks and balances.
The New Yorker's Lawrence Wright on the post-Snowden NSA. Does it need adjustment or a complete overhaul? That's next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. This program note, Orchestra 2001 is presenting new music celebration of the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. this Saturday night at the Kimmel Center's Perlman Theater in Philadelphia. There'll be another performance Sunday afternoon, January 26th at the Swarthmore College's Lang Concert Hall. And a number of alumni of the Curtis Institute of Music are being featured. Composer Richard Daniel Poor's Clarinet Concerto from the Mountaintop will have its debut performance by our guest Anthony McGill, the principal clarinetist at the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra. Students who are members of trumpeter Stanford Thompson's music program Play on Philly will perform. The concert will also feature a piece by Pulitzer Prize-winning composer Jennifer Higdon, all those people having affiliations at Curtis. And I want to play a recording of Stanford Thompson performing a piece from Jennifer Higdon's trumpet songs. This is Morning Opens, recorded in 2009 at the Curtis Institute of Music's Field Hall. Our guest, Stanford Thompson, performing a piece by Jennifer Higdon, Trumpet Songs. This morning opens, recorded in 2009 at the Curtis Institute of Music's Field Hall, and the accompanist, Ilana Javeva. And that's beautiful.
Well, thanks.
We were looking at you listening to yourself.
Yeah, it's very interesting, yeah, especially after all of these years, but I mean, it was a great piece to work on, and Jennifer was very, very open. I made a lot of changes, and I was scared when I finally sent her the recording, and then she wrote me. She said, hey, what mutes did you use? And because I made some minor changes. So.
And is that a mute? Is that what we're hearing?
It was a cup mute.
Oh, right? It was a cup mute.
At the beginning and the end. So.
Beautiful.
Yeah, very beautiful.
Yeah.
One other program note here to our listeners of On Stage at Curtis is produced by WHYY, and it airs Sunday nights at 6 o'clock on TV 12. So a lot of Curtis affiliations here on Radio Times. You can give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. I'd love to go, Anthony, actually back to 2009, the inauguration of President Obama. You were performing with Yo-Yo Ma, Isaac Perlman. I don't know how cold it was, but I know it was really, really, really cold.
Yeah, it was ridiculously cold, actually. Yeah, it was a wonderful day, though. a wonderful week, wonderful experience.
Is it hard? I mean, it must be hard to play when it's freezing cold like that.
Yeah, it was very hard to play, actually. We had to use a CD that we recorded like the day before to play it, you know, because the instruments wouldn't have worked, basically. But it was absolutely amazing to just be able to work with John Williams on the piece, to be able to work with Itzhak and Yo-Yo and Gabriella, and just be there for that experience. You know, I think I couldn't have dreamt of a better place to be at that moment than outside in the freezing cold on the steps of the Capitol,
yeah,
right behind the president as he gave the speech. So, I mean, it was absolutely a dream come true.
And that piece called Air and Simple Gifts, composed by John Williams. How many years have you been with the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra?
I've been with the Met for 10 years. 10 years. It's
so
gone
pretty
by.
Much out of school, then.
Yeah, I got my first job in Cincinnati with the Cincinnati Symphony, and I was associate principal there. And for 4 years, but it was it's been a great, you know, 14 years of my professional career playing in really great orchestras with great people.
And besides just the length of time of operas, I'm assuming when you're playing with the human voice, it's a different kind of experience than playing with other, just strictly other instruments.
Yeah, it's actually really inspiring, really wonderful. I mean, you get to the human voice does things kind of the natural way, the right way. They phrase in a way that is very special and emotional. And so you hear this all the time, and I'm getting inspiration constantly from up above.
And they are up above, right? And are you way in the back there?
No, we're like down in the pit. We're not covered. It's not a covered pit. And the sound is actually really good down there. It's a big, spacious pit. And we're not super low either. We're not terribly beneath the stage or anything. So it's actually very nice. You can hear the singers quite well. I just can't see them, unfortunately.
Do they have cameras at all?
The string players can, but I can't because I'm facing the audience. I'm the worst seat in the opera house,
really?
Basically. Yeah.
They don't have cameras that you can look at?
No.
No?
I wish. I've talked about putting a spy camera on the conductor's podium so I can have a little monitor on my stand.
Maybe the NSA can get you something
that
you can set up there.
They totally could. Yeah.
You're going to be conducting. Is that something you do typically or normally, Stanford?
Used to do much more conducting in the first couple of years of the program. But it's, you know, there are a couple of groups from the Philadelphia Trumpet Ensemble and some other ensembles that I work with. So it's always a thrill. It's a little nerve-wracking, but then I'm holding the baton. I'm saying, I don't have to make any sound. I just have to wave the right patterns. But also, I'm there to encourage the kids. Mm-hmm. You know, I want them to know that I'm in it with them. And, you know, we're going to get through this together. And so,
is there something you, sort of like a coach, is there something you say to them before a performance about
what
you're going to be doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's mainly about, you know, representing themselves well, but that we have to communicate. You know, they have to watch me. I have to trust them. And as much as they watch me and trust them, that will equal the success of the performance.
And people make mistakes, right? I mean, it's helping them understand that.
Right. And I've been on many stages with them. And at this point, they understand that, again, if we communicate well, then we're going to get through it. And then we'll have a great party at the end.
Do you make mistakes, Anthony?
Yes.
Do
yes,
you?
I do.
Like
I should plead the fifth, shouldn't I? Yeah. It's the hardest interview ever. She's asking me if I make mistakes. No, yeah, of course. Everybody does. It's a part of the process. It's part of making art, you know. But, you know, it's not about that.
Yeah.
It's not about that.
But do you beat yourself up if you do something like that?
No. No. I used to, I think, at some point. And you want to limit the amount of mistakes. Right. and the severity of them. And usually if you don't focus on them, you make fewer. So once you get to accept that the performance that may happen, you can't control every single thing that happens. Sometimes you have to let go in order to actually play perfectly, you know.
Yeah. Makes sense to you?
Oh, yes.
Let me get to Eliza from, it looks like Kimberton, to join us on Radio Times. Eliza, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. What a wonderful show today.
Thank you
so much.
You're very welcome.
I'm a harpist. I studied with the great Ann Hobson Pilot. And I know that as a young African-American woman holding a principal chair in a major orchestra, Anne's experience starting in the 1970s was very much of being a pioneer or blazing a trail. I just wondered if your guests feel that that's still the case for African-American musicians in the world of classical music, or has it changed?
It's a good question. I'm tossing it to you, Anthony. Go ahead.
I think that's a wonderful question, and I've met Ann Hobson Pilot before, and I thank you for calling in. I think it's when I first joined the Cincinnati Symphony, for instance, and I was a 21-year-old kid, one of my colleagues, Norm Johns, was a cellist in the orchestra that also joined that orchestra in the 70s. And we didn't talk about it too much because I think it was pretty emotional, the stuff he went through, and it was tougher than people can imagine. And so I think that, you know, nowadays we are getting closer to be able to have educational opportunities that people like Stanford are offering kids to expose them. We're seeing a few more people of color join orchestras. So when kids from Play on Philly go to the symphony or go to see concerts, they can see people that look like them a little bit, which is one of the best ways to encourage diversity in these institutions. You know, there are more students studying at the conservatories around the country. There are organizations like Sphinx and others that are promoting just high levels of success in classical music. And I think, you know, that's what it's all about. I hope that when kids come to the opera, they can, if they're up high enough, they can see me down in the pit.
Yeah.
You know,
are you the sole African American?
No, actually, at the Met we have three permanent members and a fourth associate member at the Met, and it's a great place for diversity at the Met, especially because we do all of our auditions behind a screen, and which is interesting. So you know, there are more and more opportunities, but I do feel like, you know, we're still at the beginning.
Right. I think a very important part of the process is making sure that these kids have access to those types of opportunities at a very young age. You know, when we even look at the 14-year-olds that get into Curtis, you know, this process starts, you know, much younger, but it's working with the kids, it's working with the families for them to also see that, sure, I mean, if their child really wants a career in music, that there's a pathway to it. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to look at Anthony's path, for example, and say, yes, I can do it. Mm. It's a little bit more easier when, you know, these kids see, you know, Anthony and our kids up on the stage of the Perlman. You know, they know these things are going on. So I've always looked at it as, you know, can we build a 8-lane highway, mm-hmm, between, you know, West Philly, North Philly, for example, into places like, you know, Center City, and from a cultural standpoint.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's not a coincidence that Stan and I actually went into music as seriously as we did, because we had, you know, Stan had his parents, he had his brother, he saw these, and I had my older brother, and I had parents that were educators, and we saw these immediate role models that we could mimic. And I think that, you know, Ann Hobson Pilot probably inspired a generation of harpists. I see kids coming to auditions that also happen to have the same skin color as me now, you know, clarinet players that possibly, since I said I'm getting older now, probably have known about me since at least 2009,
right,
if not
right
before.
Right.
And so it does affect who comes up after you, you yeah know, who you see
right
growing up.
And even growing up, you know, we knew about the McGill brothers in Atlanta. And I'll never forget my
you have a very funny look on your face.
Now I feel really old.
No, I'm serious. I mean, and I remember I was in the 7th or 8th grade being at the dinner table and talking about how my brother and I were going to be the next Miguel brothers, but the better looking version. So
what? Are you serious?
So it's really amazing how it works and how it happens. We just need more of these stories. And it's very inspiring.
I should say to our listeners, before we went on the air, our guests were talking about how old they are. Stanford saying, I'm so old, I'm in my 20s. Anthony, you were saying, I'm so old, I'm in my 30s. I won't tell you how old I am.
Oh, gosh.
Well, on that note, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times. Anthony Miguel, as I said, I saw you a couple of years ago, and I was just determined to get you on the show. So it's really an honor and a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Honor's all mine. Thank you.
You're welcome. He's principal clarinetist at the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra. He's a 2000 Curtis Institute of Music graduate. And Stanford, you were a guest on the show a couple of years ago as we were talking about El Sistema and your program. And it's a great pleasure to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Well, thanks again.
You're welcome. He's the CEO of Play on Philly, an El Sistema-inspired tuition-free after-school music program here in Philadelphia. And he's a trumpet player and a 2009 Curtis Institute of Music graduate. The Orchestra 2001 New Music Celebration of the Life of Dr. Martin Luther King will be performed this Saturday at the Perlman Theater at the Kimmel Center at 8. And a program will also be performed next Sunday, January 26th, at the Lang Concert Hall at Swarthmore College. And we do want to close things out with another piece by our guest Anthony Miguel, and we want to play an excerpt of him performing George Gershwin's It Ain't Necessarily So from his 2010 recording, Anthony Miguel, again accompanied by pianist Gloria Chien.